Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The Eurotrip, when I read that, I was immediately thinking of the movie. Do you know the movie?
Hi, I'm Leanne.
Hello, Leanne. Leanne, are you a Eurotrip podcast listener?
I am, yes. I should say, I met some Eurotrip fans here. I was chatting with people outside the entrance. And they said, oh, are you Bella Quist? And I said, yeah. I know you're from the Eurotrip.
What did you have for breakfast?
It was last night. I did not have a kebab for breakfast.
Queen Laureen, Eurovision winner. Did you ever think you would be back here again?
I get goosebumps. No way!
Martin Ostadar, executive supervisor at the Eurovision Song Contest. Welcome to the Eurotrip.
Thank you very much. Welcome back, I think it is, right?
Hello and welcome to the Eurotrip, the world's favourite Eurovision podcast. It's James here with you for possibly the most emergency episode we've ever had to do. Because at precisely 10 o'clock in the morning, UK time, on the morning of Monday the 5th of February 2024, my phone went ping as I was eating breakfast and it delivered the news that the one and only Petra Mede is back. Yes, she will be the host of the 2024 Eurovision Song Contest in Malmö, Sweden in May. This will be the third time she's hosted the contest, and I don't think it's too much of a stretch to say that she is one of, if not the, most loved presenter we've ever seen on the Eurovision stage. Let's not forget, she will be hosting this year alongside a huge Hollywood actress in Malin Åkerman. She's Swedish-born, was raised in Canada, and now lives in the USA. You'll know her from The Comeback and Entourage, as well as The Heartbreak Kid and Watchmen. But for Eurovision fans, we are delighted to have Petra making her return. So on today's emergency episode, we'll be hearing what Eurovision means to Petra in her own words. Yes, the excitement levels are still very, very high, as the news broke just a matter of minutes ago as I'm recording this, at 50 minutes precisely, as I look at the clock on the wall over there. What do you think of the news? We'd love to hear from you. Do let us know. We are at Eurotrip Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. We are also hello@eurotrippodcast.com on the email. I'd love to know what you think of Petra making her Eurovision return 8 years after we last saw her on that Eurovision stage in Stockholm. But back in 2021, for our first series of The Contest and Me here on the Eurotrip, we brought you an incredibly rare English language interview with Petra to get to know more about her and all about her love of the Eurovision Song Contest. So to celebrate the news of her return this year, we thought we'd bring you that conversation in full, either for you to listen again, or if you're a brand new listener, and if you are, welcome, of course, for you to hear it for the very first time. Now, on The Contest and Me, we always ask our guests the very same questions. So we like to find out their first Eurovision memory, their favourite Eurovision song, the moment they fell in love with the contest. Basic questions, yes, but the stories our guests tell us are always fascinating, and Petra is no exception. But when I spoke to Petra, I of course had to start with one very crucial question. Petra, before we get going, before I welcome you on, I must get you to finally put to bed exactly how we pronounce your name, because so many people say it in so many different ways. So Petra, tell us how we would say your name.
Petra Mede.
Ah, wonderful, wonderful.
Is it? Can you repeat it, James?
Oh, I don't know if I should, because I'll just embarrass myself. Maybe I should just leave it to you and I shall just call you Petra from now on. How about that?
You can say Petra, yes. The thing is so funny because my dad always said, oh, we gave you and your sister international names. But actually, they did not. Because they can say Petra Mede. But the thing is, people say Petra Mede, which is actually more correct way of saying it if you want to sound a little bit Swedish. So, but it's awkward for anyone who's not Swedish, I think. Yeah.
It is. Never mind. We can move on with it anyway. Petra, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you so much for joining us here
I'm
on the podcast.
So happy.
We've got loads to chat about. I imagine you've got some wonderful stories, but should we start by talking about Eurovision 2021? Did you watch it? What did you think about it this year?
I did, because I was longing for the Eurovision because the COVID, everything has been like up and down. And I think people have been longing for things that unite us and get us together. And so I was really longing for the Eurovision Song Contest this year. Yes, yes, I saw it. Yeah. And I will not say the country I voted for. There were many, many good songs. I was so pleased that they were able to do it. And it was great fun. Yes.
Why aren't you going to tell us who you voted for? Is it a secret? Are you not allowed to tell anybody?
Well, the thing is, okay, I might as well tell you. I think there were many great songs. The thing is, the Icelandic song last year when the Eurovision it wasn't held at all, was it?
No, not at all.
I really loved that song. So actually, I would have liked that song to win. So I still got, you know, my heart was pumping for the Icelandic, because it was the same guy singing. I forgot his name right now.
Daði Freyr.
Yeah, exactly. So I think I really like that song. I think it was, but the first one last year was even better. Actually, I would have liked that song to win.
What did you think about Tusa, of course, representing Sweden this year? How did you enjoy him this year?
Wonderful. Of course, we always want Sweden to win. Or the thing is, actually, I don't really mind what country wins, because I think the contest is bigger than that. It's actually more like a big party. And the most important thing is that people come together through music. So that's actually what I think the Eurovision Song Contest stands for, more than being a song contest, which is also, of course, nice. But I think the party and the love around it. And of course, Tusse is also very close to my heart. And here in Sweden, we have this radio show every year in summertime called Sommar I P1, Summer in the P1, which is this channel. And he talked for 1 hour and a half about his life and his background and the Eurovision. And, you know, the whole country listened to him and we all fell even more in love with him. You know, he's just such a wonderful person. And his voice is also, I mean, I love the song and what it was about and everything. Yeah.
You must have watched Melody Festival in this year as well, I imagine. It looked a little bit different to how we've seen in recent years without the crowd. But did you watch it? Did you enjoy it? Did they do a good job?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think, not to be bragging too much, but I think that Sweden, thanks to many people, Christer Björkman, of course, and Edvard Oxelén and many, many more, have made the Swedish competition, which is called Melodifestivalen, you know, a great show that is like a tradition that, you know, the majority of the Swedes watch it. This year, a dear friend of mine, Anna Granat, and Micke Mortensson, they were responsible for everything that was around the competition, like the comedy and the sketches and the hosts and everything. And so they were like different hosts every time, without an audience, but on a great stage. And it was in the final, it was Måns Zelmerlöw and Shiman Yavarani, who's a great artist. And yeah, I think they did a very, very good job. And it was one spectacular, what do you say? Do you say number or like a spectacular, yeah, number, yeah, made by Pernilla Wahlgren and Per Andersson, who are two comedians and singers here in Sweden. And they just blew us away. And I think Anna and Micke, who made this number, they were just one of the best things I've ever seen. You know, things were put on fire and they were hanging down from the ceiling. And it was a number where everything that can go wrong did go wrong. So it was, yeah. Oh, I think, well, they did a great job. And the thing is, I think that all the Swedes working in the media or artists, we have become kind of used to not having an audience, sadly. I mean, we love when the audience is there, but we have had to cope as best, as good as we can. So everything on the telly has been, you know, I've been doing other shows on the Channel 4 and Let's Dance, which you also have in England, of course, but do you call it Let's Dance? Yeah.
Strictly Come Dancing, we call it.
Strictly Come Dancing, yeah. And I mean, we are used to having, you know, so many people around, and we did it without any audience, and somehow we managed to make something else out of it and even become somewhat used to it. So I think that the Swedish television as a whole has coped, but we are longing for the audience, of course.
And it was the final year of Christer Björkman, of course. You mentioned him yourself. He's just done a remarkable job over the last 20 years or so. You must know him quite well as well. I imagine you've worked with him a few times too.
Yes, I absolutely. I don't know everything about him. I know that he's very tired in the morning. That I learned. He made such a good concept, and he made the Swedish Melody Festival something that was concerning almost everyone, you know, from children to elderly, and very a show that was very including, and where also new artists can make great success. And the Swedish competition has become very, very important. I don't know if it's that important in other countries, actually. How is your national show doing? I mean, because you do have a competition. I mean, wasn't Måns?
Yeah, so we, from 2016 to 2019, we had a national final, but it was just one show on one evening. It was very small.
But is the Eurovision Song Contest as big as it is in Sweden, in Great Britain? Yeah. Or
in the UK, it's very popular, especially on the evening. But I think a lot of people watch it because they don't like it and they like to sort of make nasty comments about it and stuff like that. So I think the Swedish audience really appreciates it, whereas a lot of the UK audience doesn't, sadly. But maybe that will change. Maybe that will change.
I think that, because that was actually the way Swedes looked upon the Eurovision Song Contest before, like 20 years ago. But I think Christer Björkman changed that into taking it more seriously. Of course, we can still have like entries that are more comic. I mean, we still can see that in the Eurovision Song Contest, and then you can laugh at it. But at the same time, we consider it a very, you know, kind of high profile competition. We had our opera singer, Malena Ernman, who participated, who is like an international opera star. And if you talk about credibility, I think the Melody Festival has earned more credibility in the 20 years that Christer Björkman has worked with it.
We'll talk a little bit more about the UK and the BBC a little bit later, but I want to wind the clock back. I don't know how many years, maybe you'll tell me, because I want to know what your very first Eurovision memory is. Can you remember seeing Eurovision for the very first time?
The answer is so easy, because I'm in the spot of the ABBA era. You know, I was born in 1970. So when I was 4 years old, they won, you know, every Swede watched Waterloo when they won with the song Waterloo in Great Britain, actually, in UK. Yeah. So that's my absolute first. That's actually almost the first memory as a human being, because it was so big. And I remember running down to the, what do you call the kindergarten, or how do you say it in
the school?
the school, yeah. Like preschool. And we were like hysterical, and they had newspapers there, and we were cutting out, you know, the head of Agneta and Frida and pretending to be them. And it was just so big, so big.
So your first memory is, in fact, 4 years old, and you somehow remember ABBA and the Eurovision Song Contest. That's madness.
Yes, 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 yes. And I think one of my, well, the absolute first record I got, I think my dad bought it. It was the Waterloo, the ABBA record, yeah.
Wow, that's remarkable. I know you were very young, but, you know, hearing stories from, you know, maybe people who are older than you or your parents, did Waterloo and did ABBA change the contest in Sweden, do you think?
Absolutely, yes, yes. I mean, I wasn't there to experience how it was before, but I don't think Sweden really... Well, you know, the 70s was quite like a left... politically, we were quite on the left wing here in Sweden. And I think the Eurovision and even ABBA was considered a little bit commercial. So it was not, you know, if you wanted to be like real cool and have a lot of credibility, you were like... very into alternative artists and things like that. But I think ABBA really changed it in 1974, and everyone just fell in love with them and the contest. So from there on, I think it became bigger than it had been before.
So when do you think you first fell in love with the Eurovision Song Contest? It's a question we ask everybody. When do you think that moment was that it just you just sort of clicked with it and you just realised... I really love this Eurovision Song Contest.
Well, the thing is that I would have to be boring to say that it was that year. I mean, I had never, I was only four. I don't remember what I had seen before, but I know that from that day, I always was so thankful to the Eurovision Song Contest for letting ABBA win or having ABBA as winners. And I mean, they were like, ABBA and the Eurovision were like, for me as a child, the same thing. Yeah. So therefore, I would say that I have seen it more or less ever since. And then I think I fell, well, of course I fell in love with it when I was hosting it. Because then I really got into it in another way. And I met so many people that were like fans and, should I say, fanatics. And then I just had no distance to it at all. So I would say starting working with it made me even falling more in love. Yeah.
I can't wait to find out some more stories about 2013 and 2016 when you hosted it. I'd love to know a little bit more about when, you know, you're growing up and you're getting a bit older and, you know, what are some of your other memories about watching Eurovision on TV or even Melody Festivalen on TV? Because, you know, we must mention that Melody Festivalen is as big as Eurovision in Sweden.
The thing is, it is sometimes I would say it's actually bigger because it's, or equally big, you know, we care just as much about Melodi Festivalen as the Eurovision Song Contest. So when it comes to Melodi Festivalen, I remember when I was like 9 or 10, we always, when I went to school, because I went downhill, I lived up on a hill and I went down and I went with my friends. And if we started singing there, it was like an echo over the valley where I lived in Gothenburg. And there was an artist called Ted Gärdestad, and he had a song called Satellit that he won with. Satellit, satellit, oh. Satellit. All the kids just, you know, singing, and the echo over the valley, just, you know, being so in love with this song and this guy. That is like a great memory. And also, I remember, you must correct me when it comes to the years, in, wasn't it in 1980, Making Your Mind Up? And if you want to see some more, na 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 na.
1981, I think it was.
1981, yeah. That I think that was maybe one of, after ABBA, that was the second song that I really fell in love with. And I think the show when they pulled the skirts off the girls and they were like sporty and yeah, I always wanted to be one of the girls. I love it when it's a group of two boys and two girls, obviously.
Oh, honestly, those stories are just...
And we actually had one, I'm sorry to interrupt, we had Björn Skifs, also a great Swedish artist, and he was singing in the Eurovision, "Det blir alltid värre framåt natten." It always gets worse when the night comes, because I miss you and everything. And he forgot his lyrics in the Eurovision Song Contest when he was singing live. But I don't think anybody who was not Swedish noticed, but all the Swedes, you know, we were laughing, but we were like shaking because he was just saying nonsense. He was saying nothing, blah, 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 zum, 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 zum. And I remember being like this, but the thing is that nobody else in other countries, they didn't understand it. So, but he really forgot all the lyrics. And I don't know if that ever has happened before or later. So that's also a strong memory. Yeah.
I'm surprised you never forgot any of your lyrics when in 2013 and 16, when you did some of your songs when you were hosting. I don't know how you ever remembered all of the lyrics.
You know, when we did this, a number, do you say a number? Yeah, a number called the Swedish Smorgasbord in 2013, which was like almost 7 minutes long. It was a song and a big show about everything that is Swedish.
I come from a country that's hard to find, somewhere near the icy pole. But though we are freezing, please bear in mind, Sweden is gonna warm your soul. Our people are cold, but our elks are hot, a horny horde in every fjord. Our moves may be loose, but they hit the spot on our Swedish smorgasbord. A tour of our
neighborhood. It was hilarious, but I remember I think it was like 1 o'clock the same night before, we were still rehearsing it. And, you know, there were so many things coming on stage. It was so much logistics about it. And I was coming off stage from that side, running with those dancers, coming. Was I sitting on a moose? I don't even remember. And then the lyrics, and it got faster and faster. And, you know, it was just crazy. But everyone, and I remember Edvard Avsilien, who is, you know, I think everyone who loves the Eurovision knows about Edward. He directed this this great number. And, you know, I just put all my faith and trust in him. I think we all did. But, you know, when we rehearsed it the first time, and I think Edward said that afterwards, that, you know, but they didn't tell us who were on stage, that they, you know, they just said, but we're not going to make it. It's not going to be possible to do this. It's just too crazy. And the thing is that 2016, Edvard had the same high ambitions as he always has, and then Måns and I did this love, peace, yeah, exactly. That was also like almost the same thing, although I think it was a couple of minutes shorter, but it was the same thing, you know, the ambition we had, or that everyone had, with so many dancers and all the cameras. You know, I'm amazed that I participated in this.
What was 2013 like? When do you remember getting the call to say, Petra, we'd love you to present the Eurovision Song Contest? And you must have thought when you got asked, okay, but who else am I going to do it with? Because you were the first person in, I think, about 18 years to host it solo. You were the first person to host three shows, because obviously you did the semi-finals solo.
Yes, yes.
You're mad, aren't you?
Yeah, well... Yeah, I absolutely remember getting a call. I think it was Christer, Edward, and the new EBU director, just out of his name.
Yeah, Martin Österdahl.
Martin, I said Matthias, Martin Österdahl, of course. They invited me to a dinner. And I actually, the thing is that I was pregnant and expecting a baby in January. So I, you know, I didn't even think about being an option, because I knew that the Eurovision was going to be held in May. And I mean, for me, I knew that, of course, I can do it. But I thought people maybe think that I would be on mother's leave or maternity leave or something like that. Yeah. Which I never were, never have been, because I love my baby and I love working, and I've taken her with me. So when I had this dinner, of course, I I did the math and said all these three people are in working with the Eurovision Song Contest. So maybe it has something to do with that. And then, well, you know, we finished dinner and then they asked, I don't know if it was Christer or if it, Martin, I think, what would you say about hosting the Eurovision? And I mean, of course, I said I wanted to, but from there it was a lot of work and planning before everything was arranged. But yeah, it was an unforgettable moment, and I'm so thankful. I'm so grateful for having had this opportunity, because you know they have been the gigs of my life, together with the Hammersmith when I hosted with Graham Norton. You know, those three moments were, you know, the greatest I've experienced.
So what was it like for 2016 then? Because you must have thought after 2013, you must have thought, okay, that's once in a lifetime, what an amazing experience. And then they come back and ask you to do it again.
I could never foresee this. It was, but the thing is, I think that proposal came quite early, earlier than the first time. So I mean, Christer and Martin and Edward they have to speak for themselves, because I don't know how the decision was made, but I think they made the decision quite early, because they got in contact with me and Mons quite early, yeah.
And what was it like working with Mons? Because you would have, I presume, 2009 Melody Festival, and you hosted that, of course, and Mons was there. So, of course, you've worked with them and met them before. What was it like to work with them at the contest in 2016? That must have, I mean, it looked like a whole lot of fun.
Ah, it was so much fun. You were actually asking me about the first time also, if I thought I was going to host it with someone. But I don't think that ever, no, we were thinking about one host, that, or they wanted to have one host. But the second time, I don't know who was asked first, but I think that both Mons and I just screamed yes, because, you know, we just... we haven't worked that much together since 2009, but you know, we've known each other, and I think he's so much fun. He's a comedian, just as I'm a singer, not. but you know, and once we started singing, rehearsing, we just knew that this is going to be so much fun, and I hope that also went through the TV screen, that people could see, because I think that if you see two people having fun and then that they enjoy each other, that makes everything so much easier, and you kind of get into the same mood as they are.
I even saw some signs with your name on it, Mons.
Yes, thankfully I have a couple of monsters in the audience.
A few what?
Monsters. That's what my fans are called, monsters.
Oh, very interesting. Well, you know, I also have some fans.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
And what are they called?
They are called very intelligent people.
How much did you work with Edward? You've already mentioned him a few times already. But, of course, I imagine the relationship must have been really close between you, Mons, and Edward to make sure that showed.
Extremely close. Yes, yes, extremely close. Yeah, it was, I mean, it was like we were almost isolated doing our thing for many months. And then, you know, we came into the big production. But I think that is also very important when you work with the director and the writer, that you get into the same mood. And we were really getting the vision that Edward had for us. And, you know, he's also very so cooperative. So we made it, and he knows us so well. So he knew, I would say there was really nothing we had to like change or so. His vision was something we bought from the very first minute. And then Mons, I mean, I think I really discovered how much fun he was and how extremely professional he is. And, you know, I would say, because all of the people in the telly, you know, we can be moody and it's a lot of nervousness and things. But he's always, you know, just keeping calm, or not as, or at least not showing us if he's irritated or so. And I would say the only thing Edward and I didn't agree on with Mons was coming out to his country house. Because Edward and I are so much of city people. And from the beginning, Mons told us, oh, we have to come out to, you know, we can spend the weekend on the countryside and we can swim. And Edward and I, we were just trying to procrastinate, you know. Yes, of course we will. But, you know, but we never got there because we were too lazy and too much of city people. So we never got to show the great house. And now it's sold. And he probably bought a bigger one. So we were making a little bit fun of that, but yeah. Oh, he was so, it was so much fun. And it was also, I mean, it was so great to host it alone, because that's also sometimes easier because, you know, you just have to rely on yourself. And if you make a mistake or so, you don't have to be responsible for somebody else's, you know, if I don't do everything right, I feel responsible for months. Whereas if I forget words or things and I'm doing it myself, I can kind of rescue the situation. So first I was a little bit nervous that how am I going to, and I'm also quite individualistic, you know, like having things my way and so forth. And Mons, and I was thinking, how is it going to be? And the thing is that Mons actually just made me feel much more safe and also funnier, because he laughed at me, and I love people who laugh at me. And he was also so much fun. So you know, I would love to work with Mons again. He's just great.
Another one on 2016, the semi-final, the interval act, where you do this, you know, this big grand number. You know what I'm going to ask? The part where you've got to do the languages. You've got to sing all of these languages that have ever been performed at the contest. You're shaking your head. You look stressed already, just me mentioning it. Go on, tell me.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say, well, first of all, I should say that when it comes to my preference, I like this old Hollywood dub. So I think that number is just as great as, because Love, Love, Peace, Peace has become, you know, like a kind of a song that all the fans know. But I would really like to emphasize also this number. It was so classy and it was really up my alley. Is that what you're saying? Or down my alley? So yeah, but it was so hard. And Mons was so much better than I was. So yeah. Oh, we were rehearsing day and night. It was so fast. I think, well, we shouldn't compare, but I would say Mons did it somewhat better, but it was, yeah. Oh.
And that was live, wasn't it?
It's all Edward's fault. No, who wrote the lyrics? I should have a talk to that person.
And it was live, wasn't it? You weren't miming. You were actually singing those words live on the night.
Crazy, crazy.
In the eighth, can you hear a Romance and Luxembourgish sung? We've had two songs with sign language and three in a made-up tongue. Antillean, Creole, Norwegian, Vero, Viennese, Neapolitan, Catalan, Udmurt, Montenegrin, and Maltese.
It's a Greek, Albanian, Slovak, Ukrainian, Romani, Russian, Romanian, Crimean, Slovenian, Hebrew, Armenian, Arabic, and Lithuanian.
Portuguese, Macedonian, Breton, Estonian, Pontic, Icelandic, Croatian, Bulgarian, Georgian, Italian, Bosnian, Latvian, Corsican, Serbian, German, Hungarian.
Polish, and English, and Irish, and Finnish, and Swedish, and Spanish, and Dutch. Some Russian, Turkish, and Danish, and French.
Tahitian, though not very much.
And though I don't know Czech, Swahili, Azeri, or Greek, music is a language that we all know how to speak. That's your decision. It's your decision.
So and not only that, but I mean, when it comes to singing and just, you know, it was a kind of lot of choreography at the same time. And also there, we had all the dancers, you know, they were standing in that line or there. So you can't make any mistakes. That's what I mean. If you're standing alone on stage, I would say that's actually the easiest thing, because you can if you feel safe. I mean, and as a comedian, I'm a comedian from the beginning. You can always kind of get through things. But when you're in this great show and everyone, you have to rely on each other. You know, I can't just bump into a dancer or you know, everyone will fall. And so, but the only thing I miss is not being able to do it again, because, you know, those things, we do it once. Of course, that is also the charm of it. But, you know, sometimes you want to say, oh, I would like to do that again. I would like to do those two numbers, you know, 100 times more. But it's one-off. That's also the great part of Eurovision, that it's direct and it's live and it never comes back. It's yeah.
Yeah, it's absolutely marvellous. And thankfully, you did a wonderful job both times. I want to ask you about your favourite Eurovision year. I know we've talked a lot about 2013 and 2016, mm-hmm. so maybe you can try and choose between them. But also, another of your favourite years where you didn't host, just because of the songs or something else. Can you try and choose a favourite year as well?
When it comes to the earlier Eurovision Song Contests, I mainly remember the songs actually more than the show around it. And I think that's also because the show around it has become so much bigger the last years. I mean, I remember, of course, Lill Lindfors, Swedish host in 1985, should that be?
Yeah.
When she dropped her dress. I mean, that is like, and she is, you know, she's like a role model for me because she is so calm and sure of herself, and I was so inspired by her. So that was, you know, I'm sounding very nationalistic, but of course it's more fun when your own country is hosting it, and that's also what you remember. So I remember that also when Germany did it a couple of years ago, when they had the I think it was great, what was the girl, the comedian's name, I don't have it now, but I think she was so much fun, and they did a great job also. And I remember, what year was that? Si tu aimes la musique, danse avec moi. Si tu aimes danser, na 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 na. You know that song? Me and my best friend, I think we were around 9, 10, we wrote a Swedish version, the Swedish lyrics to that song. And then we sent it to the Swedish television and said that we had written the whole song and we wanted to perform it in Swedish. But of course, they understood that this was not our song, so we never got to sing it. But I remember the Swedish lyrics. Om du gillar musiken, kom och sjung med mig. It was, yeah, we translated it into Swedish. Now these are like just a glimpse of different Eurovision Song Contests.
I know I asked you for your favourite year and you've mentioned about 20 different years, but I'm going to let you off because I'm not going to force you to choose one. But it moves us nicely on to favourite Eurovision song. And for somebody who isn't a singer, you've sung quite a lot so far, but which is wonderful, I must say. But can you?
Well, don't think my manager never thought it was a great idea. You can't sing. Well, I did my best. I always wanted to be a singer, and I would have loved to participated in the Melody Festival, but I don't think I'm that much of a singer. But I do sing, you know, no one can stop me from singing in the bathroom. Yeah. Or Eurovision Song Contest.
Well, now we're at the time where the submission window is open for Melody Festivalen. Are you, Petra, going to write a song, enter a song? Are we going to see you in Melody Festivalen 2022?
Well, the thing is, I must tell you, I had a dream. I don't know if it was a nightmare or if it was a wonderful dream. I dreamt that I was going to participate in the Melody Festivalen because I think I have like a little, yeah, you know, there's something that I can't let go of. And the thing is that everything was in the dream, everything was arranged very quickly. They said, oh, we have a song here, you're going to sing it tomorrow, and you're not announced, but we will, you know, we will tell it during the show that you are coming. So I hardly learned the song. And, you know, I was trying to do the dance steps, and, you know, my manager said, this isn't good, you know, but, you know, now we have promised. And I just said, but am I going to, you know, am I going to spoil my career as a host and a comedian by doing this? And, you know, my managers say, yeah, you might. But everyone was like, you know, like clapping, like when you're at school and people are, yeah, do it, do it, do it. And then you kind of do something that you never should have done. And I remember waking up all wet and sweaty just when I was going to start singing.
So maybe the dream was an omen. Don't do it. Stick to comedy. Stick to presenting. That's your area. Don't do any more singing. What about your favourite song then? Have you got some favourites that you always like to listen to? Have you got some that always come to mind when people ask you about your favourite ever Eurovision song? It's hard. It's a hard one, isn't it? It's a difficult question. It depends on what day of the week it is.
I should actually have to... Okay, let's just mention some of those that I frequently sing. Of course, it's ABBA, it's Puppet on a String, it's Cliff Richard, it's Making Your Mind Up. I constantly go back to, the Belgium, J'aime, j'aime la vie. And then, of course, Måns Zelmerlöw's Heroes, I think, is... of course.
He would love to hear you say that, wouldn't he? I bet you he loves it when you tell him that's one of your favourite ever songs. He loves it, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, yeah, I hope he does. But I think it was, it had everything. It was so powerful and Euphoria is also, I sound very nationalistic, but I think Euphoria is, I've heard it in so many versions. I actually heard it in an orchestra, symphonic orchestra played, and there I actually spoke to the director and said, what do you think about this melody and this as a piece of music? And she said, it's fantastic. And she comes from the, you know, classical music side, and she said that melody is so universal and also fits in different kind of styles. So, and then there's Johnny Logan, of course. When I was at the Hammersmith and he came up, started singing on stage. What's Another Year? Yeah, no, I'm sorry. The answer is What's Another Year.
What's another year for someone who's lost everything that he owns? What's another year for someone
I can't really decide, but if I should, I remember, I mean, that's the only song that made me cry. Of course, I was also in that age when you cry a lot. So, and I remember actually going out with a boy, like, what year was, what's another year?
1980, I think.
1980, okay. Well, shortly after, or maybe 3 years after, I actually shortly went out with a boy whom I thought looked exactly like Johnny Logan. I never married, so and I didn't marry the Johnny Logan, but I mean, I remember one of the reasons I fell in love was that he looked like Johnny Logan. So I have to say, yeah. And the other Johnny Logan song is Hold Me Now. No, What's Another Year is better, yeah. No, I will stick to that. I'll stick to that, yeah.
Have you ever met Johnny Logan?
Well, I met him then, and we had like an after party after the celebration of the Eurovision Song Contest. I talked to him briefly, but I was very starstruck, so I don't think I said many words. But he seemed very, very nice and very polite, and yeah, a little bit older, just like we all.
Shall we move on to your most memorable Eurovision moment? I imagine it's going to come from either 2013 or 2016, given just how much fun you had there.
I would say...
it's another difficult one, isn't it? Because I'm trying to think of 2013 and 2016, and for a lot of people...
Yeah, I would say one moment that was off stage, and that is in 2013, when me and Edward, we were like, you know, we never parted. And then there was like a little pre-party where all the contestants, it was like a red carpet, and the contestants and their crew were coming in to like the concert hall in Malmö, and they were being greeted by the kommunfullmäktige, I don't know what you call that, like the mayor or what you say in that city. They were being greeted and they were being invited to, you know, having champagne and eat a little bit. So, and me and Edward, we were also standing there to greet everyone. And I was all dressed up and in makeup and everything. But the thing is that nobody noticed me. So me and Edward, we had so much fun. Because in the beginning we were standing, you know, and I was, you know, greeting the artists, and you know, they were not full of themselves, but they had a lot to think about. And I don't think that their priority was to think about, ooh, who's hosting this? So, you know, they saw my face, they'd never seen it before, and they were, you know, hardly impressed. They just thought this is one of the, oh, yeah. And I said, I'm Petra Mid. I'm going to host. Oh, okay, okay. And then, you know, so that was the first artist. But after like 30 minutes, they didn't even say hi to me because they were just wanted to have the champagne and parting, talking to the mayor and the principal of everything. And, you know, so after like 20 minutes, and I have a back problem, so I was really tired. And, you know, Edward, he gave me a chair and we both sat down and we were like so moved out of the center of this event. Although I was the host of the Eurovision, that was really, you know, that was a reality check that we were like not in the center of everybody's mind. But I remember laughing a lot about that. And I also remember, you know, now we can laugh at it, but I remember also the night before the finals when in 2013, when Edward and I were rehearsing the voting, and we had to like get contact with all the different countries. And I had a dress from Jean-Paul Gaultier, and it literally weighed 13 kilos. I don't know how much that is in pounds, 13 kilos. And I already had a back problem. So what we did actually, we put a chair up because the skirt was so big. So we actually had, there was room enough for the chair. And I if I don't remember wrong, I think Edward at a point was sitting under inside my skirt when we, you know, coming with a chair when the camera was on something else. And we at 1 o'clock at night, we were still rehearsing. And, you know, we were almost in tears because we were so tired. And, you know, we had already made the two semifinals. And I don't know if people understand how much this week of work is, because we basically do two shows a day the whole week. So, you know, when we do it live, we have already rehearsed it from top to end, I think, three times. So, and when you do that, yeah, I mean, you are just exhausted. And I remember Måns Zelmerlöw also, he had so much energy in the beginning. And I remember thinking, he's going to be tired, you know, after, you know, in the middle of the week. And I remember once coming to his, I think we had done the two semifinals, and, you know, Måns is always so polite, but for once, he had put like a note on his dressing room. I'm sleeping, don't disturb me. And then I understood that, even he could become a little bit tired because it. So anyway, yeah. So I remember that night when we were almost like crying of tiredness, or how to say, because of
I can well imagine.
I don't answer your questions very well. I give you like five answers every time.
Honestly, it's fine. We're getting loads of stories from you. I've got two more questions. We've done loads about looking back at the past. Can we do a couple where we look ahead to the future?
Yes, of course.
One, which we've gotten so many great answers from all the other people we've spoken to, is about the UK. And if you were in charge, if you were the head of delegation, if you were the person to choose, what would happen to the UK going forward? So try and make the UK better again, like it used to be. What would you do?
I think it's a pity if it is, as you say, not taken as seriously or just being mocked of, or I don't know how the rates are when it comes to viewers, or if it's high or low, or is it low?
The viewers are very good, actually, because of a lot of people.
Are.
Yeah, so it always gets a lot of people watching it. But like I say, a lot of people watch it because they like to make fun of it, or they like to make ridiculous.
Well, I think that one thing that Edward and Krista and Martin and, well, many people working with the contest did was to be a little bit self-aware and also be able to make fun of yourself, that in the show you show that you are having kind of a distance at the same time as you are in love with it. So you can actually, like in Love, Love, Peace, Peace, you kind of you make fun of the competition, but in a loving way. And if you have done that, then I think you have the mandate or the authority to take it seriously. So I think in the interval acts that are made here in Sweden, in Melodifestivalen, it's a lot of meta, do you call it meta humor, that we kind of make fun of ourselves and the competition as such. And that actually makes it possible to take the competition seriously when it starts. And then I think the magical thing is that building up to the final, if you go and have like 6 shows before the final and you go around to different, I mean, small cities have hosted the semifinals in Sweden. And that, you know, if you come to a smaller city with this national show, you know, everyone is, the whole city becomes alive and, you know, for 1 week they really live for this. And there are so many volunteers working with it. And so they make a buzz about it. And if you go around Sweden and make this buzz and it builds up to this final, I think everyone in the country feels like they are part of it. That it's not just something happening in Stockholm and that you don't care about, that that you actually build, it's like you build up to it. And also the thing is here in Sweden that it's possible to make a career out of Melodifestivalen. So you know that if you win or if you do, you don't even have to win, but we have this girl who sang a song just with a guitar, Clara.
Klingenström,
quite a serious song actually about leaving a bad relationship. And I mean, she didn't win, but her song and her career is just moving up like this. So in that way, I think it has become a little bit of what the idol has been. Isn't it like that in the UK, that after that you can really make a career? And I think the Melodifestival is the same. Whereas I have understood that in other countries it isn't. You can participate and then you just maybe are forgotten again. But here is, yeah. So I think those three things, being able to make a good career after it, building up in many shows, and then having a lot of humour.
There you go. Write them down, BBC. Petra has spoken. I know Krista...
Finally, I answered the question.
I know Krista said a few years ago, Krista Bjorkman, of course, he said a few years ago that he would have been interested in helping the BBC turn their fortunes around. If the BBC rang you, Petra, to come and host a show, would you do it?
Mm-hmm. In a heartbeat.
Really?
Really. I mean, I worked with BBC and Graham Norton, and I'm so amazed by how professional the English telly, or at least BBC, is. One thing I can tell you is that here in Sweden, we usually don't work with prompters. So you have to learn everything you say. You know, you have to learn it by heart. And when I came to London to do this 60s... Eurovision show, I'm not going to be able to do this. I mean, I can't learn all the text. And then I worked with Simon Proctor, who's just wonderful. And he said, you don't have to learn anything, Petra. We've got prompters. And I just said, what are you saying, Simon? And I just looked everywhere. There were signs saying what I was supposed to say. You know, there was a camera and just beneath it, or just there, everything. So I could actually just, I know, I hardly had to, I had to prepare, but it was great.
Wow.
So I would absolutely come. Yes. If my English is good enough, now I see that I'm forgetting words, but I know I can get into it. Absolutely.
Petra, it doesn't matter if your English isn't good enough, because it's on the prompter. You just have to read what it says.
Exactly. But how should I improvise? I will improvise anyway. Oh yeah. No, I think my English is fine. I'm actually amazed by this interview, how I think I have a lovely accent. I lose words, but I, you know, and I remember at school, I always wanted to be British. So when I was like 8, I said, I'm Petra. Yes, of course I can. And I tried to sound like a snobby English person. I would love to come. Yes.
So Petra, next year when the BBC does 6 shows from 6 different cities, yes, shall we pencil you down for Newcastle? Do you want to come and do the show in Newcastle?
Oh, of course. Yes, Newcastle. It sounds, yeah, castle and you, two good words. Yes, absolutely. And Mons can do the city before. And then we end up together in the finals in London.
Perfect. Let's see what happens.
Yes.
Petra, one last one from me. If we were going to change something about the Eurovision Song mm-hmm. Contest, if you were allowed to choose one thing to change, mm-hmm. what would it be? What would you like to see different at the contest going forward?
Well, I think now I'm speaking from my point of view, because since I'm a comedian, I would like to have a lot of comedy, more comedy in the Eurovision Song Contest. And I also would like the people commentating on the, you know, the national commentators, that they don't speak when the hosts are speaking, because then we miss, you know, I've seen the Eurovision Song Contest from 2012 being showed in other countries. And then when I speak, it's the commentators that are just saying other things. So they lose all the manuscript that we have written, all the jokes, and I think that when the hosts speak, you can have subtitles instead, so that you don't miss all the fun that we have prepared.
So Petra, you mentioned that dream you had earlier on about participating at Melody Festival. And is there any chance that we'll ever see you host Melody Festival again? Because we've seen you do it twice before, and we've seen you do Eurovision twice before. We'd love to see you on that screen again.
Oh, thank you so much. I hope you're talking for many people. You know, I don't close any doors. I love Eurovision. I love Melody Festival, and it will always be a part of me. Absolutely.
Perfect stuff. Well, Petra, what a journey we've been on over the last
yes.
goodness knows how long. Honestly, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. Thank you so much for all your wonderful stuff.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure. I hope you got some answers, you know, or half answers at least, because I talk so much.
No, honestly, Petra, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're listening to The Eurotrip, the world's favourite Eurovision podcast.
There she is, Petra Mehta, soon to be 3 times host of the Eurovision Song Contest. Only one other person has been able to say that in the past, Katie Boyle, who hosted it 4 times between 1960 and 1974. Who knows, maybe Petra will do it again if Sweden wins in the near future. We'll just have to wait and see. Well, thanks so much for joining me for this emergency episode of the Eurotrip. Plenty of episodes to keep you busy this week. If you haven't caught up with Melfest Monday from us yet, that is already in your feeds, as I'm joined by Gustav Darlander and Ben Robertson to round up everything from Melfest at the weekend. Plus, I'm joined by Liamo, Diasara and Engmans Kapell as they prepare to perform in heat number 2 this coming weekend. We'll also be back with you on Wednesday this week for your regular episode of the podcast, as we widen the scope and focus on all things Eurovision. So, in the meantime, don't forget you can follow us online. We are at Eurotrip Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok and Threads. We are hello@eurotrippodcast.com on the email. You can head over to eurotrippodcast.com as well to read all of our exclusive stories. And if you would like to support what we do here on the podcast, you can do that over on buymeacoffee.com/Eurotrip Podcast. As well, don't forget to subscribe, leave us a review and rate us 5 stars. From me, James, it is goodbye.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.